to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Political Cesspool Radio program. We are now embarking upon tonight's second hour, the second of 3 hours of tonight's live installment of our award-winning show. I'm your host, James Edwards. I am sitting in our more than comfortable studios here in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio. And we're also broadcasting tonight, as we always do, to our affiliate stations, AM and FM of the Liberty News Radio Network, and simulcasting online to a worldwide audience of loyal TPC fans at thepoliticalcesspool.org, our official internet headquarters, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and libertynewsradio.com. Listen, you know, there are a few things that happen every week on this show without fail. About 30 minutes before the show ends, I genuinely marvel at how fast the time went. And at the top of the second hour, I can't help but thank Keith Alexander for his contributions to the program this evening. You know, this guy is absolutely amazing. We love Keith. He is such a great part of the Political Cesspool staff. He's an incredible co-host, and I know that you appreciate just as much as I do that which he brings to our broadcast each and every week. So it was a fun hour tonight, a fun first hour with Keith, and we are going to work hard to make sure that the next 2 hours are just as enjoyable to you, those of you who make up our fan base. And I tell you, if you've gone to our website this week, thepoliticalcesspool.org, we have for you there a collection of oddities, it would appear. It seems as though that which popped up on my radar this week was a little more, I hate to use the word, but I don't know a better one to say, diverse in nature. We kind of jumped around a little bit to different topics, and that's not totally unusual because we certainly are not a one-trick pony here. At TPC Studios, we cover all of the issues of the political spectrum, some more than others. I mean, we certainly are known for our opinion, analysis, and commentary on race, politics, and hypocrisy in 21st century America. But on our website this week, we featured a few other articles, and one of them dealt with the phenomenon known as adult babies. Now, this is something you don't see every day. It's something you don't hear about every day. But if you visit thepoliticalcesspool.org, ladies and gentlemen, you can not just read about it, you'll see video about it. And I picked up on it because a key senator has asked the Social Security Administration to investigate how people live their lives role-playing as adult babies, and they're able to get taxpayer-funded disability payments after one of them was featured on a recent reality TV episode wearing diapers, feeding from a bottle, and using an adult-sized crib he built. Now, do you remember a few weeks ago, Keith Alexander and I were lamenting all of the bills, all of the taxes, the insurance premiums that we all have to pay just in order to make ends meet and scrape by an existence in modern-day contemporary America? Well, here we have people who are role-playing, mind you, and I say role-playing because they're not retarded. You know, and I don't know what word we're supposed to use these days. Is it retarded? Is it mentally deficient, handicapped, crippled? They're kind of like blacks in that regard. I don't know what they want to be called, special. But this guy isn't any of that stuff. He's completely normal. He can work. He can think. He goes out and he can build stuff. But he role plays. He likes doing this. He's an adult baby, and he's getting money as a result. Senator Tom Coburn, an Oklahoma Republican and the Senate's top waste watcher, asked the agency's inspector general to look into 30-year-old Stanley Thornton Jr. and his roommate Sandra Diaz, who acts as his mother, saying it's not clear why they are collecting supplemental security income, SSI benefits, instead of working. So you got this guy. You know, there's not enough words. I don't have the words to really illustrate for you the story here. You got to go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and click on the blog entry entitled Adult Babies and watch this stuff for yourself. But basically, you got this guy and there's nothing wrong with him, and he's getting free money, taxpayer money from the government because he pretends he's a baby during the day. You know, and I have to agree with the senator from Oklahoma that this guy shouldn't get disability payments. But at the same time, doesn't political correctness teach that all white men, and women for that matter, should act like infantile, subservient infants in some shape or form? And if you're going to take away welfare from people who live their lives as adult babies, wouldn't that also wipe out taxpayer-funded assistance to most minorities in this country? The only thing better than the articles at thepoliticalcesspool.org and the stories that we cover on our website in between each weekly broadcast is the comments themselves, the comments from you, the people that make up our listening audience. You like any of the stories, you like any of the news we cover on the show, go to the website and provide your comments on them. And that's where the real fun is at thepoliticalcesspool.org. The only thing more disturbing that I could find this week than adult babies was the story of genderless children. Now, I was reminded about this story from my wife. She saw a television program that focused on so-called genderless children. And also, just as we did with the adult baby story, we back up our coverage with video footage, this time from ABC News. And it talks about how the parents of so-called genderless children are fighting back. And basically what we have going on here is that you've got these white parents who are trying desperately to show that they're progressive, quote unquote, which is, you know, basically, you know, it's anything but progressive. When you think about moving forward, you think about something positive. This is anything but that. But they're raising their children as genderless entities, meaning that they're dressing them in neutral colors. If it's a boy and they have what biology would teach us is a boy and a girl, but they're not raising them as boy and girl. They're raising them as genderless children, and they're letting them, you know, if the boy wants to play with doll stuff, that's cool. If the girl wants to, you know, be a cowboy, that's cool. Because, you know, they're progressive, and gender is a social construct, they say. It was laughable enough when people tried to argue that race was a social construct. But now they're taking it a step further than that, and they're saying that gender itself is a social construct. And ABC News gives this big, long story about the parents who are raising these genderless children. And we have it for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Don't really want to add more than that. I just want to tell you to go check out the video for yourself and leave comments. Leave comments on this story on our website underneath. You know, but all I can say about it is the damage these parents are doing to their children in the name of being progressive will adversely affect them for a lifetime. It's cruel, it's unnatural, and it's unhealthy. We're going to take a break, everybody. We'll be right back right after these words.
There's more political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
When the truth is found to be. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime. Toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. I don't know where you go after you've talked about adult babies and genderless children, but we're sure going to try to find a path here through these woods or through the murky waters of the political cesspool, as they say. Welcome back to our broadcast. I'm your host, James Edwards, and joining me now in the studio, I tell you, we really had to dig deep tonight into the political cesspool all-star stable of talent. You know, you look at the political cesspool's hosting staff roster, and then, of course, you have me. And then when you get down to the co-host, you have Keith Alexander, Bill Rowland, Winston Smith, and Eddie Miller. You got, as I said, Keith, Bill, Winston, and Eddie. Now, Winston, as I told you last week, has lost all of his hearing for the time being. He is completely and legally deaf, and he is, you know, consulting with people about that, and he's going to have some implants in his ear, and hopefully he'll be back on track soon. Bill Rowland is also facing some medical ailments. We won't go into too much detail about that at this time, but Bill Rowland is also going to be sidelined for the time being. So that takes down two of our co-hosts. So we had to go deep down. You know, you look at these basketball teams, and they got 12 men on their roster, but they normally don't play more than about six or seven in the rotation. Well, just to liken it to that, the I had to dig deep onto my bench of co-hosts. I had to go to the very bottom of the barrel and pull up, call up onto the court tonight for some action. Eddie the Bombardier Miller, he's back with me tonight. You know, I'm just joking about that, Eddie. I tell you, Eddie's throwing back tonight. Eddie walked into the studio here tonight wearing his official Political Cesspool T-shirt. Yes, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, we actually had T-shirts printed when we first went on the air back in 2004. We went out of stock in these T-shirts in 2005, and we never did get another run made. I guess we should, as popular as the show is now. But Eddie coming in tonight to the studio wearing a T-shirt that I haven't seen in 6 years. Came out of his trophy case, he said. But Eddie the Bombardier Miller co-hosting with us tonight. Eddie, good to see you, buddy. How you doing?
I couldn't be better. I'm really looking forward to a good night here in the cesspool, James. I really hate what's happened to our fellow co-host. They're like brothers to us. Well, they're not like brothers. They are brothers. They're spiritual brothers. But I tell you what, folks, you need to hang on to your seat tonight. And if you have tender sentiments, you know, if you're easily insulted, you might want to switch channels, because we're gonna unload some napalm tonight. The B-17 has been completely overhauled. It has had it can carry two tanks of napalm now, compared to what used to take one. And we just drop it. No telling where we're gonna drop that napalm. It's wherever we feel like it. But hang on to your hat. Put your asbestos suits in your britches and get ready to rock and roll, son.
Hey, that's why he's Eddie the Bombardier Miller, ladies and gentlemen. He knows where to drop it, and we're going to be carpet bombing tonight on the Political Cesspool. It's a scorched earth program that we're looking forward to over the course of what time we have left tonight. And, you know, I was being facetious, of course, in the role that Eddie plays on this program. He's just a valued and trusted member of the staff, as any of our crew is. Eddie became an official co-host of the Political Cesspool radio program back in 2006, and although his appearances on the show have been limited over the course of the last few months, he's had a very busy schedule, but he's back on board now with Bill and Winston being sidelined. I first met Eddie 4 years prior to his induction as a co-host. It was back in the year 2002, before the Political Cesspool was even a glisten in my eye. 2 years before the show would ever even have its debut program, I met Eddie the Bombardier Miller. It was during my run for state representative here in Tennessee. And those of you who haven't been tuned into the show since its inception, I don't know when the last time I told this story was. But indeed, back in 2002, 2 years before TPC was to launch, I ran as a candidate for state representative here in Memphis. I was a 22-year-old kid. I call myself a kid now. I thought I was a grown-up when I was 22, but now at 30, I realize that there is a little bit of difference, and I'm sure when I'm 40, I'll think that even more so. But I was 22 years old in 2002, running as a conservative independent against the liberal Republican incumbent. When I announced my candidacy, I had no campaign infrastructure. The only workers who went out on my behalf were my parents, my pastor, and a couple of friends. We were outspent 10-1, and we spent $10,000 of our own money running that campaign. My opponent spent $100,000 on a seat that paid $16,000. In the end, I was defeated, but I still managed to earn 20% of the vote, which was unheard of for someone in my position. Keep in mind, I was 22 years old, getting outspent 10-1, running against an entrenched incumbent as an independent, and running on a platform very similar to that which you hear me espouse here on the Political Cesspool radio program, and still I earned 20% of the vote. And it was during that campaign that I first became acquainted with Eddie Miller. We actually had a campaign headquarters. We ran a pretty, you know, legitimate campaign. Despite our lack of funding, we were very aggressive. We were outspent, but we were never outfought. I remember knocking on every door in the district in my attempt to win that seat, wearing out the soles of two pairs of shoes in the process. And I actually have one of those pairs of shoes in a box in the attic. But I knocked on every door. And one of the doors that I knocked on happened to be a man that I'd never known prior to that. It was Eddie Miller. And Eddie didn't answer the door, but I left my campaign brochure there on his porch. And when I went back to the campaign headquarters a couple of days later, I had a note from Eddie, a handwritten note from Eddie there waiting for me. And he said he wanted to help with the campaign. And that's how we became acquainted. And then we became friends. And then a few years later, the radio show got started. And then he became a co-host. But we were able to create such a stir during that campaign that State Representative Trey Hargett, that was my opponent, that was the incumbent. Trey Hargett himself, not a campaign lackey, but the man himself, was caught on tape going door to door, removing my campaign brochures and yard signs from the homes of people who were voting for me, and he was disposing of all this stuff. Now, this became the top news story in Memphis politics during the week prior to Election Day. It was covered by all of the local television affiliates, the local papers, and even received some national press for several days. I still actually have the video footage from the television stations and the newspaper archives in my office. But, you know, this is how Eddie and I, got to know each other. In the years since that campaign in 2002, I've gone on to become a celebrated talk radio personality, while Trey Hargett, my thieving opponent, became, he is now the Tennessee Secretary of State. The Secretary of State. And I guess the only... I guess the only consolation I have is that I'm more famous than Trey, but I certainly don't get paid as much. I'm not as infamous either. But anyway, why am I talking about a campaign that was waged 9 years ago? Why am I rehashing how I got to know Eddie the Bombardier Miller? Well, we're talking about it because local media, well, statewide media for that matter, are now wondering if Trey Hargett, my old opponent from 2002, will be seeking the governorship of Tennessee. And here's what the story reads. Republicans gathered at the Greystone in Paris, Tennessee on a Saturday in February to hear Secretary of State Trey Hargett deliver the keynote address in their annual Lincoln Day dinner. Lincoln Day. A big occasion on the Republican calendar in rural Henry County. The event slipped by without notice. I'm going to pause right there, and we're going to make a point with this. Believe me, we're going to make a pretty salient point right after these words. Stay tuned.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. We were making a long-winded point, and I say long-winded only because it was necessary to go into that detail just to give you a frame of reference for this story going back 9 years ago to 2002, 2 years prior to the very first debut broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program, when I was running for state representative here as an independent against a liberal Republican, got 20% of the vote, which was good. I was naive enough to think I was going to win. I was heartbroken on election night in 2002. I remember the night well at my parents' home. Lots of people, you know, had about 50 people there. By that point, we had become pretty well known. But we still got thousands of votes, 20%. Which now, 10 years later almost, you know, I can say it's quite an accomplishment. But at the time, we were receiving such a positive response from the voting public that I thought I was going to win. I thought I was going to knock out this guy. But I didn't, at least according to the official vote tally. And anyway, the guy is Trey Hargett, made lots of news, most famous, in fact, for having gone around with a 60-point lead and stealing my yard signs on tape, stealing my campaign brochures and throwing them away, and then a big scandal. Now they are saying, and I was beginning to read from an article that appeared in the Tennessean newspaper this week, which is the daily newspaper of Nashville and the biggest newspaper in the state. They're talking about Trey Hargett and all the stops he's making. He is currently the Secretary of State for Tennessee, all the stops he's making, and they're wondering if he is going to run for governor. Will Trey Hargett, my old nemesis, run for governor? Well, it gets down to it, and it's talking about all these little wimpy, feminine Republicans saying what a great candidate he would make. And all I can say is I really hope that he does decide to run again, because it'd be fun as a radio host now to cover that race, that's for sure. Of course, you know, I'd certainly have to be sure to let whatever opponent he faces know, to super glue their brochures to the door of any voter who isn't at home, because you don't know when Trey Sticky Fingers Hargett might get the itch to revisit old habits. And by the way, not to digress, but he looks a lot like Neil Sedaka. Neil Sedaka, the Jewish musician. You know, and I like Neil. Yeah, he has a lot of good songs, but they were separated at birth. I don't know what happened there. Anyway, Eddie, to bring you into the conversation here, you got Trey Hargett. People know his background now, and my background with him. You and I met during that campaign. You heard about my positions, and we became fast friends. You went out and campaigned for me, and a couple of years later, I started the radio show, and a couple of years after that, you became a co-host. But the point of this story is this: after 10 minutes of setting it up, a lot of Republicans are saying this guy represents everything they stand for. This guy would be a good candidate for governor. And to what may be the surprise of some of our fans, Eddie, I couldn't agree with them more. I absolutely agree with them. If anyone's ever met Trey Hargett, he's a very feminine, and I'm not saying this because he defeated me. I'm not saying this because we were opponents. So that's 10 years ago. It's water under the bridge. But anyone who's ever met him, who's ever shaken his hand with that limp-wristed handshake, who's ever seen his mannerisms, he is the perfect example of a feminine, cowardly, apologetic, wimpish man. And that is a perfect embodiment, Eddie, of the modern-day Republican.
Could agree more. Could not agree more. You know, I met Trey the Lionhearted myself once, face to face, James. You may remember that.
We call him Trey the Lionheart around, you know, behind the scenes.
You know, do you remember when we were campaigning for Austin Farley? Well, we were campaigning for Austin Farley.
Let me just give a little reference for that. 2 years after I, 4 years after I ran in 2002, Austin Farley, who people may remember was a co-founder of the Political Cesspool Radio program, also ran in 2006 for the very same seat. Trey was already out of office by that time. He was already Secretary of State. But Austin ran for the open seat that Trey was vacating, and this is where the story picks up in 2006. Eddie.
Yeah, you know, like I said, we were out campaigning for our old buddy Austin, and happened to meet Trey the Lionhearted out at one of the voting polls, and, you know, he saw us coming, James. You remember this. And he started trying to make a retreat away from the site, but you know, I kind of walked faster than he did and ran him down and confronted him and confronted him with some dirty shenanigans he'd been doing, and got right up in his face, and he was and I called him Trey the Lionhearted and a few other choice names, and the man he just melted. He's you described him perfectly, James. The guy is just the biggest wimp you've ever seen. I'd like to say also he's a thief and a liar. He has no honor whatsoever. And probably the only reason he's where he is now is because his daddy was another politician. He was a major general, a two-star general in the Tennessee Army National Guard. If anybody's ever been in the military, they know that the Army National Guard is nothing but a political. They're political appointments. I mean, the guy wouldn't know which end of the gun barrel that the round comes out of. But and his daddy, you know, I say it, but his daddy's a liar too. So I guess the acorn doesn't fall too far from the tree, James. You know, I have a little history with his dad, and his dad was proven to be a liar, and so the guy is. I mean, he's so typical. These Republicans and Democrats too, they are just so self-centered. They're prima donnas. They have no interest in the public whatsoever. The only interest they have is in themselves and keeping a bunch of high-paid staff around them to massage their ego every single day. They do nothing. It's just disgusting. Matter of fact, I think the only person that's worth salt running in politics in the state or the federal, in federal elections in the United States would probably be Congressman Ron Paul. But, this guy, James, he's totally worthless. But you know what? I'm going to bring something else in right now. He pretty much personifies people, and I hate to say this because I was a founding member of Oath Keepers here in the state of Tennessee, James. I don't know if you know that or not.
Well, and remind people what Oath Keepers is.
The Oath Keepers is a group of you can be prior military, prior policeman, or you can be currently serving military and policeman, fireman. And what you do is basically you take an oath to do, you renew your oath. Everybody that goes into the military, at least what I did, James, we took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. We didn't take an oath to defend the president or the Congress or anything like that. We took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. And, everybody in our circle now, James, it's no surprise. The Constitution's been totally shredded. But anyway, our sole purpose is to go to current military and police and remind them of the oath they took, and to not obey illegal orders. We have a set of 12 orders that we will not obey, and one of my favorite ones is we will not obey an order to disarm the American people. That's when we will not obey orders to shut down a city, to turn a city into a concentration camp to prevent supplies and trucks from coming in and out. Well, we also James used to go to the Campaign for Liberty meetings quite a bit. It came off of that was a spinoff of Ron Paul, I believe. Well, what I found, James, I'll also throw this in audience. I haven't been to even though I'm a founding member of the state of Tennessee, I haven't been to a meeting since probably last August. And I haven't been to a C4L meeting since about the same time. I got so discouraged because they never want to do anything. They want to sit around on their tails and just have meeting after meeting after meeting, but they never want to get out into the street to hand out brochures. To go visit, their congressman or the sheriff. And what they do, they arrange a polite little meeting, and two or three of them will go up. Say, for instance, two or three of the C4L people will go up and very politely meet with a congressman lackey, and, then they will get kicked out the door. But the way they should do it is the way they just recently did it last week in Austin, Texas, when we're going to get to a topic later. I'm going to bring this in a little bit early now, Joe. James, just to illustrate my point. Last week in Austin, Texas, the state legislature had voted 30 out of 31 senators, state senators from Texas, voted to pass a law to make it a felony for people to stick their hands in women's pants and under their bras and to fondle them in places they shouldn't be putting their hands. And like I say, 30 out of 31 senators voted to pass that law. The Congress, if I'm not mistaken, was unanimous. They all voted unanimously. All right, but then the lieutenant governor came in, David something Hurst. The lieutenant governor came in, former CIA agent who's assisted in all kinds of shenanigans, helping throwing over little banana republic countries in South America and elsewhere. He came in with federal officials onto the Texas State House, which is a felony in Texas state law. And he did that anyway, and they threatened the state of Texas with a no-fly. Well, folks, we got to go to break. We'll come back. We'll get this back here in just a little bit, folks.
We're going to take a break. We're going to make a point of all this. Believe me, we're going to put the cherry on the cake. Stay tuned. It's all going to come to something.
We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, folks, James Edwards and Eddie the Bombardier Miller back here with you on the Political Cesspool Radio program Saturday evening, June 4th. It's hot as it can be here in the South. It's miserable, and we love it. You know, I'm a June baby, born June 22nd. This is, you know, I came into 100-degree weather. I was born into it. But no, I can't lie to you. I don't love it. In fact, it never took. But we're here. It's June, and we're here live, and we're suffering through the heat to bring you another installment of this show. And I'm going to try to bring, I know we've kind of had a roundabout presentation for you over the course of the last couple of segments. We've been talking about Trey Hargett. And no one in the world knows who Trey Hargett is unless they lived in Bartlett, Tennessee, or unless they read the Tennessean newspaper last week and know that he may now be considering a run for higher office, Congress, or even governor of Tennessee. And so we had to, just to give you a background or just to give you perspective, we had to kind of spend a little bit more time than we normally do on any subject just to let you know who Trey Hargett was, that he was my opponent in 2002 and the dirty tricks that he engaged in and who he personifies. And that's really the most important thing. It's not about, you know, as Garth Brooks said, burying the hatchet and leaving the handle sticking out so we can always bring it up. I'm past what Trey did to me in 2002. In fact, the best thing that ever happened to me, quite frankly, was losing that election, because if I'd have won that election, I would be just another member of the Tennessee State House of Representatives. You know, I'd be just another limp-wristed guy like Trey Hargett. Instead, I'm a battle-tested warrior, host of the Political Cesspool Radio program. If I had not lost that campaign in 2002, the broken road of political activism and this wonderfully turbulent career that I've had would never have opened itself up to me. And so I'm much happier as the host of the Political Cesspool than I probably would have been if I had been elected to the House of Representatives in Tennessee. But nevertheless, the point is, now that you know who Trey Hargett is, the point is that he perfectly represents everything that modern-day Republican operatives want out of their candidates. Feminine, weak, cowardly men who don't stand for anything of substance. And Eddie Miller started, you know, chasing the bombardier, as we affectionately call him, started chasing a rabbit, and he got, you know, stuck under some brush there before that last commercial break. But he was even taking it so far as to compare Trey Hargett and the limp-wristed Republicans of modern day to the operatives of the Campaign for Liberty and Oath Keepers and some of these other groups that you would think would be a little bit more battle-hardened, but even they themselves don't have the courage to do a lot of things that you would think would be child's play. Things, Eddie, as simple as appearing on this radio program. And so because of that, we say that we agree with the featured news story in the Tennessean newspaper this week that Trey Hargett would be the perfect embodiment of the modern-day Republican Party and even those to the right of center of that, because he stands for nothing and he's going to risk nothing in his campaign to reach higher ground. Eddie, you can take it from there, and then we'll move on to additional topics. We actually are going to talk about things not related to my 2002 bid for office here on this program tonight, but take it from there, Eddie.
Well, I'm going to ask him my run for the office. Now, you know, getting back to Trey and the Republicans, people should, participate in politics. They should do like the people in Texas did last week when they stormed the Texas State House, and they caused the state legislature to be reconvened to reconsider this bill that they had voted unanimously to make it a felony for people to stick their hands in ladies' underwear. But see, so typical for Tennessee and the associations that I've been, with, like C4L, the Tea Parties, all you have to do to back them down is to threaten them with racism. Call them a racist. You know, I was talking to my daughter and my wife today, and my granddaughter, on the way home, and I said that most of these people that I've met, in the Tea Party, especially the Tea Party, I think they had rather come down with vaginal herpes than to someone to call them a racist. That the worst possible thing that can happen to one of these, you know, rhino Republicans is to be called a racist or an anti-Semite. Of course, everybody knows an anti-Semite is someone that a Jew doesn't like.
Yeah. Actually, I have to steal the microphone from Eddie here for a moment. The modern day definition. Yes, we have to get into modern day definitions because Eddie is right. The Republican Party has eaten up with it. And so, too, are many of the seemingly harder organizations like Campaign for Liberty and Oath Keeper, so on and so forth. But they would rather Eddie likened it to a venereal disease. They'd rather be dead than be called a racist. And what is a racist in today's society? A racist is simply a white person. A white person is, by today's modern day definition, a racist. And racism is anything a white person does that a minority doesn't like. What is an anti-Semite? An anti-Semite is anyone who openly disagrees with a Jewish person. That's it. But nevertheless, people are so afraid of being condemned and falsely accused of being something that they're not, they will sacrifice every principle they have to work their way around of these sorts of character assassinations. And this gets back to the topic of the hour. Modern day Republicans like Trey Hargett, modern day people who are seemingly to the right of the Republicans, and even they Eddie, provide a very limited substance compared to that which, if I may say so myself, the loyal servants of the Political Cesspool radio program provide for our fans.
You know, James, we've had several people on the Political Cesspool once before. We had do you remember when we had Darla Mann on? She was one of the big operatives for the Fayette County Tea Party. She did a wonderful job. She's a real smart lady. She was real on top of the issues. And I was really surprised at how well she did. But she came on that one time, and we had set up a regular schedule to have her own, and then she called me and said that she couldn't come on anymore because a couple of the head honchos at the Fayette County Tea Party said that we were, a bunch of racist white supremacists. They said that her husband said that James was a skinhead. You know, James doesn't have a lot of hair, as a lot of people, most people know. and so the husband, to show you how ignorant he was, he went to the Political Cesspool website and saw a photo of James and said, well, he's a skinhead. Well, see, people, all they had to do is come out and tell Darla, the people from the Tea Party, that we were racist and she was a racist for coming on this show. And instead of her, standing to her ground, she backed out. She wouldn't come on anymore. We've invited several people from other Tea Party organizations and Campaign for Liberty. They just don't want to come on. They avoid us, James, because they don't want to be called racist. They have no substance.
Well, Eddie's exactly right. And, you know, I don't consider myself no more than Eddie or any of the other people associated with this program. We don't consider ourselves to be any of the things that the radical left attribute us to be. But I'll tell you this, we're lucky. We are lucky that we are called these things, because if we weren't being attacked by those who seek to put America last, we wouldn't be effective. You can gauge your effectiveness by the number of attacks that you endure, and there is no conservative entity, certainly no conservative broadcast media entity, that is more attacked than the Political Cesspool. But just to put a fine point on it, to show you how thorough the enemy's victory has been against our people, and this goes back to how thoroughly watered down the Republican Party has become, and even these organizations to which Eddie belongs, the Campaign for Liberty, Oath Keepers, etc., how watered down they've become is evidence of how thorough the victory of our enemy has been. And to prove the point, I refer you to Sam Dixon, our good friend. Eddie, you and I were talking about Sam just before the show. He writes this in one of his books. If there is an afterlife for pioneer northern racial egalitarians such as William Lloyd Garrison, Charles Sumner, and Thaddeus Stevens, they must be looking down with astonishment and delight to see the descendants of Robert E. Lee vying with each other to try to prove that the antebellum and wartime South held the racial views of the most extreme northern abolitionists. Could there be, and this is the point I want you to take, especially take note of, ladies and gentlemen, Could there be any victory more complete than to have the descendants of one's own defeated foes embrace the victor's principles and repudiate those of their ancestors? And that, Eddie, is what we see now embodied in modern-day politicians like Trey Hargan in the Republican Party and modern-day so-called right-wing activists in the Tea Party and Campaign for Liberty and Oath Keepers. What we have now is they will go as far as they can without going so far as to be labeled a true conservative. And how do you know you're a true conservative? You know you're a true conservative when you are called a racist. And that is what we have now today. Those who seek to be our leaders only want to do so if it's politically expedient for them, and they repute their ancestors in order to gain favor with the left. We got to take a break, though. We're out of time, but Eddie's going to be back with us for the complete third hour, so stay tuned, everybody. We're just getting warmed up.